last 24 hours, in a sense, has given me particularly and all of us a look at what I think the Christian life is about. We have the sad moments, and we also have the glad moments. I was just thinking as I sat down, thinking about Brother Butler, looked over and saw Dolores sitting here, and God blesses in helping people to get better and to be able to be back at the services as well as those that we can remember that used to sit in different places in these pews that are not here anymore. Yesterday at 11 o'clock, I met my youngest daughter and three grandchildren and ate with them to celebrate my 10-year-old's birthday. Just before 3 o'clock, I sat with my son, daughter-in-law, granddaughter, and watched as my 23-year-old grandson went across the stage and received his master's degree. And I know you think I'm not old enough to have a 23-year-old grandson. And then I drove straight back to our Yahoo's party last night and enjoyed a very excellent time of happiness and excitement. And I appreciate Hazel's planning that and John's entertainment. John entertains just by being there. And by the way, Dolores was able to be there last night. And then this morning, as I drove up here, I mentioned I got a call of a friend's death, and after getting here, a call of another friend's death, and then a few minutes later, realizing the seriousness of William's illness. But you know, that's what Christianity is about. We have the weeping with those that weep, and we have the rejoicing with those that rejoice. And we need both of them. I made a statement this week to someone that as a minister, I go to the highest peaks and the lowest valleys with families. I'm able to be there when there's a birth and when there's a wedding, and I'm there when there's a death, and sometimes in the process of dying, and sometimes even having to tell people that they've lost a loved one. We have the peaks and the valleys. And in a sense, isn't that what the Christian life is about? We have our ups and our downs, as we say. And it just points out that we need God all the time. I want to point out something else to you. Sometimes I become a little concerned when I think about how we're losing some of our stalwart Christians that have been involved in the church for a long time. And since I've been here, we've lost Miss Annie that sitting over here, and we've lost Brother John Williams that you knew when he was active, and maybe others that I don't think of right now, and others are sick. But did you notice this morning who led the opening prayer and who led one of the prayers at the Lord's table? And I think it was Wednesday night, at least in the last few days, that Dylan led a closing prayer. These young men were not here some time ago, at least not involved in the work. Braden's been a Christian for a while, but Cody and Dylan, along with John and Laquita, have become Christians in the last year, or just a little over a year with John. And just think about what these young men are doing already in the work of the church. I sometimes think when I consider men like Guyon Woods and Gus Nichols and Franklin Kemp and Thomas Warren and some of those, William Woodson, by the way, his wife was buried yesterday here in Jackson, men who had more knowledge than I'll ever even think about attaining. When we lose those, that's a blow to the church. But aren't you thankful that these young people are coming along? Maybe one of these days, Briley may even be the wife of an elder somewhere or something like that. She's not going to be a preacher, I hope. But just think about these young people. We don't have many young people, but we've got some great young people. And we need to continue to encourage them. I may have to charge you more today. This is the second sermon I've preached, and now I've got another one. And in a sense, the lesson that I have planned for today sort of fits in with what we've been talking about so far. This is about the 18th or 19th lesson in the series written in red, what Jesus said, and today we're talking about human relationships. And that's really what life is about. Human relationships. We might sum up the Christian life by saying that it means worshiping God and serving others. And I think that's a pretty good summary of the Christian life. Worshiping God and serving others. And if we're going to serve others, we've got to be concerned about human relationships. Matthew 7:12 says, "Therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." And the way we usually quote that verse is, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." Now, if you take the word others and them and you in that verse, you're talking about human relationships. Your relationship to others, to the them. That's what life is about. Jesus had a lot to say about human relationships, and he said more in a concentrated one sermon than he did probably in the rest of the accounts of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I'm referring to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. Those three chapters are basically about human relationships. And I want to pull out some points out of that Sermon on the Mount today and emphasize them in our thinking. There was an author, an American author, several years ago by the name of Henry David Thoreau. Thoreau was what you might call a hermit. He lived by Walden's Pond and is said to have lived on less than a dollar a day. He did not want much as far as what's provided in this life. He wanted to be by himself as he was writing, and he lived the life of a hermit. There are those who will take themselves away from society and live the life that we usually refer to as the life of a monk, shutting themselves away from other people, and supposedly in that trying to become closer to God. I believe that's a great misunderstanding of what's involved in getting closer to God, because our service to God is through service to others, taught by Jesus in Matthew 25. Unless you're going to live a life like Henry David Thoreau or like one of the monks, you're going to need to be concerned about human relationships. We talk sometimes about school, government, community, the job, the home, the church. Aren't all of those dealing with human relationships? That's really what's involved in all of those. In the first place today, I want us to go to Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16, and understand that Jesus emphasizes that we need to have a good influence. Sometimes you'll hear people say, "It doesn't make any difference what others think about me." Well, as far as the final judgment is concerned, it's what God thinks that matters, but yes, it does matter what others think about you. Especially if their thoughts are true. Because what they conclude about the example that they see may be the same thing that God is concluding. And it does matter that you have a good influence. Everybody will have an influence in some way on somebody. Jesus says here, "Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It's thenceforth good for nothing but to be trodden under, cast out and trodden under the foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. He uses two figures here, salt and light. And then he says, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I hope you noticed I left out a word. Let your light so shine. Everybody has a light that's shining. It may be dim, but everybody has some kind of influence. But he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. It seems to me that the only way that we can glorify God is through being a Christian. And so isn't he saying that you live in such a way that others will see your life and will become Christians or want to become Christians? I think that's what he's saying. We need to be concerned about the influence that we have on others and try to always have a good influence. Sometimes we'll ask our young people, what would the world be like if everybody was exactly like you? What would the world be like today if everybody had the same attitude that you have toward worship and toward service? Have a good influence on others. Somebody may very well be following you. We think sometimes we don't have as much influence on our children as we would like, but we really do. And we have more influence for good than they are sometimes willing to admit. Have good influence on other people. A little later in that chapter, at verse 23, I think Jesus was saying, control any anger and hard feelings that you have. He said, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee. Notice, your brother has aught against you. Now, there is a situation later in Matthew where Jesus says, if you have a problem with your brother, go to him. You remember that one, but this is in the other direction. If you remember that your brother hath aught against thee, leave thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge and the judge deliver thee to the officer and thou be cast into prison. Notice particularly verses 23 and 24. If there is a problem between you and somebody else, now that's human relationships, he says you go to him and make it right before you worship God. Isn't he indicating there that God is not going to accept your gift in worship to him if you're not trying to work out your difficulties that you have with somebody else? And especially when it's that somebody else hath aught against thee. Now sometimes we are falsely accused, but this indicates that you've done something. Your brother hath aught against thee, or at least he thinks you've done something. You need to be concerned about working that out. It is not wrong to feel angry. Paul would tell us that we're not to let the sun go down on our wrath in Ephesians 4. There was at least one time when the Bible records that Jesus was angry at the money changers in the temple. But we need to learn to control our anger. I doubt that we are the kind of people that we ought to be unless we can have what we call righteous indignation stirred. I hope I don't get mad, but I tell you, sometimes I get upset at some of the things that I see going on. When I see a child being harmed, that stirs my dander more than just about anything. I think that's the reason we've been so concerned about what's happened this week, this past week. It's not wrong to draw a conclusion about somebody that he's not doing what's right. And it's not wrong, in fact, well, let me still say it's not wrong. It is a fact that we will have differences among us. I've heard men say, my wife and I have never disagreed about anything. Now, I have a hard time believing that. We've never had a word with each other. You know what that means? Well, I think we had about as good a marriage as you could have, and I always tried to realize that Judy was entitled to her ridiculous opinions. But there were times that we disagreed. And there were times that we told each other that we didn't agree. And frankly, there were some times when maybe we were not as kind in telling each other. And if you don't admit that that's happened in your relationship, I've got a problem with you. Those things happen. But don't let anger and hard feelings live very long. Take care of them. Even in your families, husband and wife, don't go to bed tonight if there's something between you without discussing it. At least try to understand each other if you don't come to a complete agreement. Because we don't know what can happen before tomorrow. When you leave home in the morning and leave your spouse or child at home, you might want to think, is my relationship what it ought to be if I never come back again? Or I never see them again, will my memories be what they ought to be? Jesus also emphasizes forgiveness in the 6th chapter, in connection with the prayer that he taught his apostles to pray, and said, if we don't forgive one another, God won't forgive us. We need forgiveness in our families. We need forgiveness in the church. We emphasize the importance of a good memory. Sometimes it's also important to have a good forgettery. I don't think you'll find that word in the dictionary. But we need to be sure that we don't continue with hard feelings toward anybody. When you have hard feelings in your heart, I'll guarantee you that it will affect you more than the person toward whom those feelings may be directed. It just gnaws. If you've got any kind of a conscience, it's going to gnaw at you. Let's avoid and control anger and hard feelings. A little later after this, the next thing perhaps that he really emphasizes is that we need to avoid sexual immorality. He addresses our thoughts of impurity in verse 28, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And he addresses the overt action and maybe even the state of immorality in verse 32, whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. He's saying in these passages and in other passages that we need to avoid any type of sexual immorality. The word sex is not an ugly word. The proper sexual relationship is not ugly. In fact, it's a God-created action. From the beginning, he made us male and female and said, for this cause. The cause is that he made us male and female, which involves the emotions and the feelings and the thinking as well as physical characteristics. And he said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. The ultimate intimate relationship of a husband and wife is just as beautiful as the relationship of Christ and the church. But anything less than that is ugly and sinful. And it takes effort sometimes to avoid having the wrong kind of thought or the wrong kind of action, especially under some circumstances. He even says that if your right eye offend thee, pluck it out. If your right hand offend thee, cut it off. In other words, he's saying with this emphasis on bodily parts, take care of anything about yourself that would hinder you from having the right kind of thoughts toward others. I suppose all of us may have certain characteristics, even certain genes that may point us in different directions. You could mention any emotion this morning, and I think you would agree that there would be some people who would have a stronger emotion than others in that particular area of thought. And some people have to put forth more effort to control their emotions than others. But he says, control your thoughts and control your actions toward other people. That involves recognizing the sanctity of the human body, and that until one is married, that human body belongs to that person and to God and to no one else. And after marriage, that human body belongs to self, to the spouse, and to God and to no one else. That's a pretty simple explanation, but it's the truth. And so he says, in our human relationships, avoid sexual immorality. We're dealing with that which is written in red, but I'm going to go off this just a moment to remind you that Paul said to the young man Timothy, think of every older woman as if she were your mother, and every younger woman as if she were your sister. And think of every older man as if he were your father, and every younger man as if he were your brother. If we would learn to think particularly about those of the opposite sex in terms of this is like my mother or this is like my sister, and when we're married, think about the relationship with the wife, I think it would avoid a lot of impure thoughts and immoral actions. We need to be able to live in such a way that we can walk down the street and meet any person that we know without hanging our heads or turning our heads to the side. And that means to keep our thoughts and our actions pure. A little later in this chapter, he says something else that's important, dropping down to verse 38 in human relationships. You've heard it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I say that you resist not evil. Whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not away. Now there are a lot of lessons in those verses that we won't be touching today, but the one that I want to make from those verses is that we need to learn to do more than is expected. Sometimes you younger ones in school will figure up what's the lowest grade I can make and still pass. That's a terrible attitude to have. And sometimes at work you may determine, well, how many hours can I get by with? If I take a few extra minutes, can I get by with it? Can I do a little less than I've been doing? That's not going to make you a good worker. But the person who tries to do a little more. I remember having some classes, particularly in mathematics, where the teacher would give us extra credit problems. If you can work a few extra problems, I'll give you extra credit. We need to learn to do more than is expected. A grandfather was talking to his grandson and giving him advice about what he needed to do as he grew up, and he said, I want you to remember three words that can help you in life. And he said, what are those three words? Probably expected his grandfather to say, I love you, or something like that. But his grandfather said the three words are, and then some. And he said, what do you mean? Well, he said, if you're working for somebody, do what's expected and then some. You know what a baker's dozen is? 13. You know where that developed? From people who ran stores and were measuring out things with a dozen, and just to be sure that they didn't shortchange someone, they would put in an extra one and make it 13. A baker's dozen. Well, that's the way Christianity is. Instead of seeing how little we can do, we need to try to see how much we can do. Oh, I can get by with this, but don't live with that attitude. What can I do to make it better? What can I do that's more? And I'll tell you something. If a husband and wife both live like that, you're going to have a successful marriage. If a husband's always thinking, what more can I do for my wife? And a wife is thinking, what more can I do for my husband? Instead of, how little can I do and get by? And it will apply in every area of life. Do more than is expected. And then Jesus says, and he gets down to verse 43, basically, love everybody. He even says, love your enemy. There are different kinds of love. We are to love God supremely. We are to love the spouse sacrificially. We're to love the brethren with a self-denying love. We're to love our neighbor with a serving love. And we're to love our enemy with what I would call a searching love, looking for ways to be helpful if we can. And those are different levels of love. I have an entire sermon that I use on that subject and draw the conclusion that we can love our enemy if he will let us love our neighbor and our brethren and our spouse and our God. We can love our brethren if they will let us love those that are of a higher love. And you get on up, I could love my spouse sacrificially as long as she would let me love my God supremely. There are levels of love, but the bottom line is we need to learn to love everybody. I certainly don't love what some people do. You think about the actions that have been taken by some, and I can truthfully say to you, I hate what he did. But I still am concerned about his soul, and in some cases nothing can be done about that. But we are to try to love everybody. We're not to hate anybody. We can hate and abhor evil, we're told to do that. But we need to love the person, and especially the soul of the person. There is a person right now in one relationship that I have in life that I detest what he's doing and has done. But I'd do anything today that I can do to help him to save his soul or to turn his life in the right direction. And I think as a Christian, I must have that attitude. There are times that if I let the human element come in, I'd like to take a horse whip and line them up. But the human element cannot overtake the spiritual element, which is to try to think the best and look for the best in the lives of everybody. And then Jesus also emphasized something that's important in human relationships, and that's learn to listen. And you need to preach that sermon to me. If I need anything, that's the one I need. I'm not a good listener. I'm a good talker. Or I'm a talker at least. Jesus said in Mark 4:24, take heed what you hear. And in Luke 8:18, take heed how you hear. Listen. Listen to what's being said. In conversations, listen. Be sure you understand what the other person is saying, not what you think the other person is saying, and not what you want the other person to be saying. Listen. Oh, that's so important in human relationships. And then he goes into the first part of the 7th chapter and he says, be careful in judgment. Contrary to what some make this teach, it does not teach that it is wrong to judge. If he had wanted to teach that, he would have stopped after two words. He would have said, judge not, and stopped. But he says, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. He goes ahead and talks about a type of judgment. With what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you again. And you know the story of the mote and the beam that follows after that. What he's saying is, do not be harsh in judgment. There is a verse over in John, the 7th chapter, I believe it is, the 24th verse, that says, judge righteous judgment. The same Savior, that's in red also, the same Savior that said judge not, said judge righteous judgment. So he's not condemning all kind of judgment. Sometimes if we're talking about a situation, a person will say to me, well, now, if you think that person's wrong, you're judging him. And I will immediately say, do you think he's right? Well, yes, then you're judging him. If you think something's right, that's a judgment. If you think something's wrong, that's a judgment. It's not the judgment that's wrong, it's the harsh judgment that he's condemning. And what he's saying is we need to be careful in our judgment. And one of the things, folks, that is most important in coming to a judgment on anything is to be sure you have all the facts. That's caused me problems many times down through life, and I assume it has you too. I think I've got all the facts, and I come to a judgment, and then there's something else brought up, and it changes the whole picture. Be careful in judging. Be careful in judging one another in the church, in the family, school, at work. I suppose all of these, what we've said today, have good influence, control your anger and hard feelings, avoid sexual immorality, do more than expected, love everybody, listen, be careful in judgment, is basically summed up in that golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And there's a more complete explanation of that given in the latter part of the sermon. In fact, the last that he talks about, beginning at verse 21, not everyone that saith, Lord, Lord, but he that doeth. And then giving the story that even you younger people remember, the wise man and the foolish man, and showing that really all of this is building on Christ, building on the rock, and living the Christian life. Human relationships. Let me encourage you to think about this and to think about what your relationship with everybody else is at home, at school, at work, even in the church. You cannot control completely what the other person does. But you can control, with God's help, what you do. You cannot control what the other person thinks, even what the other person thinks about you. When you do the very best that you can do, you can't control his thoughts. But you can control your thoughts about him or her. And if we will spend more time trying to think of what we can control with ourselves than what we can't control with somebody else, and let that be the basis of our human relationships, we'll get along with one another much better. Think about human relationships and just try to be a Christian every day. Now let me emphasize the Lord's invitation. We're told, as we studied in Bible study this morning, that we must be born again of water and of the Spirit, become a Christian in order to enter the kingdom of God. Most of us have done that. There may be some that have not. And then we're told to live right in these human relationships. And when we make a mistake, to make it right. Sometimes we do that privately. Sometimes it needs to be done publicly. And so, if you have a need today, we're interested in helping you. And I want to say one thing just before we sing the invitation song. If you had been the principal of Sandy Hook Elementary School Friday, where would your soul be today?